Welcome to the coffee break for the 19th of May, 2020. Nice to see you guys. I see Peter and Solbu and BP9, small crowd today. Quick housekeeping. Today is the last daily coffee break until Monday, the 25th of May. So just keep in mind, okay. there will not be, Peter, can I get you to mute your mic? I'm going to mute that. Okay. I'm going to need to take a little more charge of the mics and stuff here, I think. So, there's going to be some changes coming down the line. I think, with coffee break, this is something that I wanted that we started as a community to be able to kind of see us through the pandemic. And now, I don't know where things are at. I think things are starting to open up. Things are starting slowly to get a little more back to normal. I know Solbu's been going out and some of you guys have been going about your day a little bit more normally. Not quite there yet, but we're getting there. But I'm back at the studio and back to doing shows every week. So things are starting to get a little bit more normal. So, but that said, I think coffee break has been a really good thing for our community. I think it's been a lot of fun and a great way for us to get to know one another on a more personal level. And we've learned a lot of really cool tech stuff too. And I'm learning a lot from you guys, which is cool, and getting ideas from you guys about upcoming shows and things like that. So that said, I'd like to keep it going. I just have to figure out how we can do that. I know the daily thing, now that I'm back at the studio doing the show every week, it's too much. I just can't do it every single day. I have not posted a coffee break since last week because I'm behind on publishing the show. Last Wednesday's show is still not up. Because I typically use my lunch breaks I wish I had time for a coffee break every day. I don't. So I typically use that time to get the things done that I need to get done in order to produce the show in the time that I have. So,
speaking of lunch breaks, are you in your office now?
I am. This is my office. Yeah. Lunchroom is in use right now.
It's perfectly understandable, Robbie. It's perfectly understandable. I speak for myself. I have no problem with that. You've got to do what you've got to do, right?
So yeah, man. And I think it's been, this is number, 54, 55, something like that. I know it'll be more obvious after it's published because the number will be there, but I think it's somewhere around there anyway. So like 50 plus days of doing a coffee break, which has been great for us, I think, for the community. And it's nice to chat about something other than what we're hearing on the news these days. So
we figured out we all have different accents.
Yeah. And you're not actually talk funny in Australia.
Nope. We all talk funny.
Yeah. Especially Robbie. So I'll figure out kind of the new schedule. And that's why I say Monday the 25th, we'll have another coffee break. So I feel like I should be able to do one a week. We'll see, but I'll know a little bit better on Monday how I'm going to structure things and how we're going to change it, because that's now cool. maybe this becomes a little more structured and more of a show. Like it's kind of evolved into that. So, and I think it's a really cool opportunity. I know all of you guys have had chances and others who have been a part of the coffee break too, to share some of the cool tech that you're working with. And we're learning all kinds of stuff from BP9, and Solbu, you've shown us some of the stuff that you're working on, and even Peter with his programming and everything else. And he knows a lot about like the circuitry and power supplies. And so I'm learning as well. And I think, if we all take turns kind of presenting even and make that, I don't know. We'll see how things evolve. Yeah. I think it's
and the next year, Peter is selling his blockbuster game on Steam.
that I want to see. I want to see that for sure.
Yeah. So just keep in mind. So there won't be a coffee break tomorrow, and so we'll see you again on Monday after today's coffee break.
Okay.
So all that said, how's everybody doing?
Yay!
I'm doing fine. a little shocker. I watched a video today.
we're at that point. We're at that point now where he's saying, I saw a video earlier today. So we're catching up in the timeline of the space-time continuum.
Not that this reminds me of a video. Not that this reminds me of a video, but I saw a video.
I just saw one.
It was on an interview by Brian Kernighan, who interviewed Ken Thompson in January of last year about the history of Unix. That was the idea. And then he mentioned how the Unix came about and how the C programming language came about. I didn't know this, but the C programming language, the name is kind of a joke because there was an earlier programming language called B, and there was four letters program language early in the around 70s or something. And it was a little complicated. So someone simplified the language and called it B, just the first letter of the longer name. And then they improved that a little bit. I think it was also because the B programming language didn't work well on the new PDB in 11. And so he improved the B language, and since he had changed it, he named it C. I thought that was
the thing to remember about C is that it only consists of less than 33-0 runtime functions that are built into the runtime itself. Everything else is all libraries. That's the thing to remember. The same is true, by the way, Peter. The same is true of Pascal. Most of what you see in Pascal, it only consists of, I don't know, 40 or 50, maybe not even that many, actual built-in functions. All the rest of it is libraries, just like with C.
Wow.
And he also talked about how they came about developing Unix. That was by accident.
It was supposed to be a print solution or something, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Originally?
Yeah, and then he had some few utilities that he needed, and the Bell Labs. And he, when he started working for the Bell Labs, they were quite insistent that they did not want to develop an operating system. So no way. Mm-hmm. So he made something for himself, and then he needed a kernel, a small kernel to boot something. And he needed an editor, and he needed a shell. And
yeah, I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, and they had it in kernel, or the few guys. Brian Kernighan mentioned that he had a single-digit user ID on the system.
Oh yeah. Yeah, oh, sure. Yep.
Yeah, and his password was
this.
They didn't have the passwords.
Nice.
That came in the late 70s, early 80s.
That was a whole different era back then. You didn't worry about hacking and passwords and all that kind of stuff. You know, the word hacker was a whole
show
different
thing. Two-factor authentication, they'll think it's witchcraft.
Oh, I know.
That's nutty. And these days, you know, sometimes maybe paying homage to those early days of computing, but sometimes somebody will bring out a product and call it something silly that's like a single character or something like that.
Yeah,
good luck Googling it. Good luck finding it in a search engine.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Richard Stallman once said, he said in a few of his talks that when he talks about how he developed Emacs and then there were some clones of Emacs because others wanted to improve and have their own. And he said that naming a program is half the fun because they are often giving it sometimes naughty and funny names, because imagining the user laughing at the name was half the fun of doing the program.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Unix command grep came from a command that you do in Bay when you do a search. I forget the exact syntax. It's probably G/E or RE/P or something like that. I don't know. But that's where the word grep came from. That's how everybody knows what that's why a search function is called grep, because it literally came from
and he mentioned that command, and that came about also by accident, because Ken Thompson wanted he needed something to do searches, and and by that time he had developed a few programs, but he stopped putting them in the slash bin folder, because he didn't want to push his way of doing things on the other users. And a week or so later, after he had used that program for a little while, then the chief of the Bell Labs came and said that it would be nice to have something that you could do some searches in files and so on. And then he said that he was going to sleep on it, and the sleeping was he needed a day to fix a few bugs that he knew about the system, and the next day everything was ready. So it was a fun talk.
I'm more practical with my naming conventions, like NEMS. I think NEMS is a pretty neat name, but it's an acronym.
Yeah,
Nagios Enterprise Monitoring Server. So it makes sense, right? But you got to come up with something fun and fresh and new, not been done before. Everybody asked me, like, where did Category 5 come from? Haven't had that question in a while. But oh, BP9 is gone. We lost him.
Yeah, probably someone called him on his phone line. He mentioned a few weeks ago that...
he's still on dial-up.
Yeah. No, he's on the DSL, but each time someone called their phone line, it dies down. So,
wonder if he needs a pot splitter. Oh, DSL, those were the days. Wow.
Yeah, I used that up until I moved here last year. And I had a fiber connection in the wall that I couldn't use. Or I refused to use it because it didn't have the services that I needed. So,
Welcome back, EP9.
Thank you, sir.
You guys want to know a little secret about me? Notice the jelly beans are going down.
Oh,
I figured it out.
Don't screw the...
I just was noticing that was in the frame. You remember that tweet? I never have any change on me, so I couldn't get any jelly beans. Not fair.
Amazon.
Hey, what's that about Amazon?
It's driving iPhone liquid kids on iPhone for myself because I got sort of problems. I have liquid to I bought it from Amazon. The old Batted stuff, you know, Batted Liquid, which is in England, which is a well-known company in England, and they bought it very cheaply, about £4 a box of it, and it lasts me for a long time. They keep sending it to me every month, so I was quite pleased with that.
So you're subscribed to receive licorice?
Yeah.
Did I follow you?
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
But it keeps it quite good you as well. Too much.
Those Amazon subscriptions, those things are great. Like I save 15% on everything that I normally buy, especially during this crazy time when you can't go to a store. It's been really helpful to have those subscriptions coming in. Things like even stuff like multivitamins and just stuff that I normally would have to go to the store to get.
We had to buy rubber gloves as well. We had to buy rubber gloves from Amazon and cleaning stuff for alcohol stuff for me. So we had to go from Amazon because we couldn't get it locally.
Yeah, there's definitely that. And certainly here, like there's been stuff that's been sold out, obviously, in the stores. So being able to just subscribe to it. Cereal is a good example. There was a time when at the beginning of the pandemic where the cereal aisle was completely cleared out. So I got on Amazon and I subscribed to receive Special K automatically every 2 weeks. And it's great. It's usually out of stock, but because you're subscribed to it, you get kind of first dibs. So,
I learned something new, Robbie.
What's that?
My restore procedure after a catastrophic failure.
Yes.
Failed.
Oh. No. Well, I hope you didn't have to learn this the hard way. Did you simulate your restore procedure?
This was a simulate, yeah, because what I took, and I, by the way, I'm sorry to change the subject, but I thought we weren't talking about the pandemic anyway, so I...
Yes, you got it. I was talking about the ability to get Special K.
Oh, okay. We can get back to that if you want, but what I did
was...
No,
that ship has sailed. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I think I mentioned that I had a spare 2 terabyte drive that I had an old version of Ubuntu installed on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I looked at the 1 terabyte hard drive that Windows 10 was already installed on, and I fired it up just to see what would happen. And it started. It sent me into sufficient catatonic state that I decided I'm not ever going to do that again. And I thought about dual booting on that hard drive. I thought, you know what? I have a spare 2 terabyte drive. I'm just going to use that. I'm not going to mess with dual boot or any of that crap. So I ended up taking that 2 terabyte drive and installing Xubuntu 20.04 on it. Works great.
Okay.
No worries at all. But then I went hunting for my documentation that I thought I had printed out for how to do a bare metal restore. And it took me a while to actually find it. And it turns out it's dated 2013. So 7 years ago, my whole backup procedure has changed quite a bit since then. So it's been a while.
So and it's the year how-to that you had written to your future self is no longer valid?
Yes. Is that correct? Correct. Or I don't think it was actually ever valid because I never did put enough detail in to say how to actually do it.
Oh, so
I'm going to treat this as a disaster. I just cranked up the old hard drive again and it's working fine. I've got the old 16.04 running just fine. And I've got 20.04 running just fine as well. I just don't have any data restored. But for an exercise, what I want to do, make sure I can restore from my backups. Because it's one thing to just take a backup, you know, be you know, FDH, fat, dumb, and happy for, you know, every week taking your backups and away you go, or every day, or however often
you
do it.
And you just trust them and you forget about them.
Exactly. One of the critical things you have to do is prove that that you can restore from the backup, or otherwise it's literally useless. So
you are bang
that's gonna
on
be
correct,
my next
my friend.
Exercise. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's my. I started it last night, and I'm going to finish it probably tonight. I'll let it run overnight, let it do a restore overnight, see what happens.
Yeah, that's smart. And some people might say, "Well, what kind of glutton for punishment would put themselves through a simulated recovery?" Well, you never want to be in that situation where you have to recover because something has crashed or you've had a catastrophic failure, and then you find something's missing, or you can't
even
recover.
Even though my documentation sucked,
are the backups still okay?
The backups, I feel like the backup is fine. I will find that out tonight when I actually do the restore. I am confident that it's okay. And even if the NAS, I mean, last night before I quit and just went to bed, I thought about what if the NAS was offline? What's the worst case scenario? Well, I have my 10 terabyte drive to restore from, and I very carefully copied just the backup files without zipping them or anything like that directly to the drive. So they should be just as usable from the drive as they are from the NAS. So that's my plan. I'm going to update the instructions and have them in place because you have to do it. You have to do it because otherwise you can't trust your backups.
There's two things that I tell my customers, and that first thing is exactly what the nail that you're hitting right now is you want to know that your backup is it has integrity, it has the files that you're expecting to be there, and you're mm-hmm. able to recover. But in business, there's a second factor to that test, and that's how long is it going to take you to recover? Because right. in a business, if you get hit by ransomware,
yeah.
or you have your server crash, or you have a fire mm-hmm. or something like that, mm-hmm. How long you're going to be down for will determine how many staff are you going to have to let go. How yes. are you going to be going bankrupt through the situation? Because yes. A lot yes. of small companies that get hit by ransomware, they just can't afford to pay the ransom, mm-hmm. and you're not going to do that anyway. And mm-hmm. then they find out they don't have a backup, and mm-hmm. you know, to get their files back is going to cost them X number of millions of dollars, and they've got mm-hmm. lawsuits pending. And so find out how long it's going to take. That's important.
The biggest thing for me is that I just wanted to say, Solbu, the biggest thing for me is that the most important thing to remember is no matter where your backup is stored, whether it be on tape, whether it be on a 10 or a 12 terabyte hard drive, or if it's on a NAS, make sure it's in a form that you can get to it. Don't trust. I don't want to say don't trust
on a, yes, on an old zip disk.
Yes, because I found out, for instance, on my Synology box that an Office document is a blob in a database somewhere. Yeah. That is useless to me. I'm not going to use their proprietary backup and restore solutions to get that yeah. document back. I need it in a way that I don't care how it's stored, that I can still get to it.
Yeah.
I remember reading an article in the Register a few 5 years ago. I think it was there was a company. They wrote about it because a company had something happened to their data storage. I think someone hacked them, and they managed to wipe all of their computers.
This is the mail service, that email service provider.
I don't remember, but okay. All of their systems was wiped completely.
RM-RF slash.
Yeah, and they didn't have any backup, and they closed the shop the day after, but they knew they couldn't get backup.
How can you not take a backup of your critical data?
EP9, if he's talking about the same company that I'm thinking of, this is an email service provider, their backups were hard connected to the same network. And mounted.
Yeah, it might be.
And so when they did an RM-RF,
so they were corrupted. They were corrupted as well.
They were removed as well. Yeah. So this thing,
boy.
And exactly the same scenario for ransomware. Ransomware spiders through your network and finds your backups too, right? So you got to have them disconnected. Get them off site.
Oh, when you make a backup, like a air backup on your drive, which you don't connect you to anything as well.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's what I do with the Synology. I've got the backed up to the NAS normally, and then periodically I'll take a hard drive and I'll back everything on the NAS up to the hard drive. That's AirGapped.
And you've seen my setup at the studio where I actually pull a drive and replace it, and it rebuilds and takes 3 days to do so. But now I have it in my hand in a Luke's encrypted format. So, you know, if somebody ever stole that, they wouldn't be able to read the data. Mm-hmm. Not that it matters.
Remember,
like terabytes of video.
I remember the day I left Windows behind. It was January 28, 2008. I know the date because my hard drive, I was running Windows 2000 because I rejected the activation which came with XP and all the later versions. Because the supplier has no idea who I am and that I'm running their operating system. If I paid for it or gotten otherwise legally, they had. Yeah. So I used Windows 2000 and finally my hard drive died. But I had backup, so I could. I have done this before. I had backups on two CDRs and. On a separate drive in the same system. You know, I imaged the C drive. When I needed to recover, did that two times. The entire recovery took 15 minutes and everything was back up.
That's one of the things I love about Linux.
Those were the days, though, when you could back everything up onto two CDRs.
It's just not doable anymore. Yeah, and here is and on this day the backups, the boot media didn't work. I knew that I had an image that I could install, and the Windows, it will take 2 hours on the Windows 2000 back then. And then I needed to install the backup program. Drive Image was the name of it, version 5 I think I had. And after you install manually, manually installing everything afterwards, I know that was a 4 days job, because installing is not the biggest job. The biggest job is setting everything up.
Getting it back the way you want it on Windows 2000.
configuring email and configure all the email rules, and then you have all the programs with it.
It took me 90 minutes from booting the machine to installing Xubuntu 20.04 and configuring the session the way I liked it.
The way I did a Windows did, I got it on a server, and I got all the disks which you install onto the server as files and a script file. And if everything collapses, I just run the script file and just leave it, and it puts it all back onto the machine through the server.
Assuming the server's available to you, Peter.
Yeah, that's right. It doesn't take so long as you do it manually. I discovered you're doing it that way. The other one I would say to Robbie, keeping resistors. Do you have lots of resistors around? I use Steradent tubes, Robbie, to put my resistors in. And I put them in a rack with holes in, and I numbered them. And you can easily get the values without losing them, damn overs and things, you know. That might be a tip for you anyway.
Cool.
Steradent tubes.
A final thought before we wrap up. I got to cut you off, Peter, because I got to go. Putting Solbu's Windows 10 recovery against BP9's Ubuntu recovery, BP9 Linux wins once again.
And it was Windows Linux 2000, for the win. Not Windows 10. It was 13 years.
Oh, right. Yes. Windows 2000 versus a modern Linux. All right, guys. I got to go. Have a wonderful rest of the week, and I will see you Monday.
See you next week, man. Thanks for the update. Take care.
Later, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.